You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
We call it a corporate wardrobe malfunction. Shares of Burberry fell on word that its CEO is quitting to join rival Ferragamo. Sometimes you just have to have a new look. Coal is the new black, speaking of new looks for Glencore, while orange is certainly the old black for Jacob Zuma. And Facebook is fighting back against the regulators with this battle to regulate big tech. But mind you, this is only one battle won in the larger war. That didn't stop it from becoming another $1 trillion market cap company. Rob Tywell, portfolio manager at Sasfin Securities, and Nick Kunze of Sunland Private Wealth have your market view. Nick, it is a green day, at least, as we say goodbye to classic business, and the retailers leading the charge. How do you read it?
Sure. Evening, Michael. Yeah, it is yes, sir, no one wants them, and today everyone wants them. So it's the uncertainty, and I think that reflects the market right now. No one really has a feel for how this market's moving over the last couple of weeks. But real push for retailers today, push for our banks. And that was despite Iran that spent the majority of the session grinding sort of lower. Didn't even I thought we'd get a little bit of a pop briefly when the news of Mr. Zuma broke. But even then, it was just a bit of an uneventful. The tape doesn't tell the true story, Mark. It was a bit of an uneventful day, although the retailers were obviously the far standout.
Yeah, I found the Rand's move quite interesting because we were recording for Business Day TV around 11 o'clock, and the judgment had just come out, and I think we were at 14.26 odd in the morning, and the Rand's drifted higher, even though this is a huge tick in the positive side of the ledger for the rule of law and for recalibrating the sensible ethical foundations of SA Inc. One would have expected the Rand to react a little more favorably to the news, but the Rand is drifting higher on other currencies, it seems.
The Rand is always, if there ever was an illustration in the last few weeks, Michael, of the Rand not necessarily being a proxy for its economy, it very much is a proxy for what happens with risk on a risk off around the world. And as you pointed out, I think the Rand more a reflection of a stronger dollar more than anything heading into a week that's going to be dominated by unemployment numbers on Friday, ADP numbers tomorrow, all big dollar movers. So that's more than that. But also, if you look at the SA 10-year, Michael, as well, also, I mean, just 5 pips sort of weaker on that yield too. So I guess we always talk about the fixed income markets and the currency guys probably a bit more clever than the equity guys. And are they telling a little bit of a different story to the Jacob Zuma news?
Yeah, the 800-pound gorilla in the room. But, you know, if you look at where bond yields are globally, I'm a little confused, and I'm sure I'm not the only one here. Nick, if I said to you at the beginning of the month that the Fed was going to come out with a hawkish statement and this explicit message that they're looking at the tapering of asset purchases, how many people would have seen this as rate positive? But that's where we are currently, the U.S. 10-year at 1.47%.
You're going to ask me to come up with a clever answer, and I actually don't have a clue. That should have been completely 180 degrees the other way. I mean, extremely surprisingly hawkish Fed, as you said. You know, real sort of inflation numbers that are surprising to the upside and appear to be far more sticky than people probably want or politicians want. And yet, I think we're the biggest flattening of the yield curve in the U.S. on the time over that week, I think, in the last better part of a decade. Extraordinary. So I don't know. I don't know if the Fed just doesn't, if the bond traders don't buy the story and they think economic growth is going to slow at some point going out, because the short end of the curve, Michael, those guys who understand bonds, the short end of the curve spiked quite aggressively upwards, but the long end didn't. So I'm not sure. You know, it's this awful transitory rubbish they keep coming out with. You know, is it transitory or not? But I can tell you, I think it looks far more sticky on the inflation side than people realize.
Yeah, and we are seeing the trade yesterday was certainly back into growth overnight. And, you know, the rotation in the early part of the year was from growth into value. We're seeing a big rotation back into growth, tech large and in charge. You know, the Dow down, the S&P up, and the NASDAQ up over 1%. This seems to be continuing into the day. The big news, Facebook versus all of those government lawyers on the campus. Capitol and, strike one to the government lawyers. They're swinging and they're missing at Facebook.
Yeah, but Michael, I mean, just touching on those textures, I mean, it's another case of where it should be the other way. You know, we should technically be heading into a higher interest rate environment, which is not generally good for high-flying tech stocks with no profits. But it's gone completely the other way. So again, I'm not quite sure the reasons why. But Joe, good news out of Facebook. We actually, a bit of disclosure, we own them in our offshore portfolios at Sundum. Obviously, now it's all-time high, so happy with that. Facebook, I think in one of the notes you sent me, one of those shares, I think everyone's got to have a bit of Facebook in their portfolios. It really is. They just keep coming out with these unbelievable numbers, and they just dominate all over the place in the social media space. So, yeah, they won this round, but regulators are going to fight back for the next round, I think.
Yeah, that $1 trillion club, you've got the likes of Apple, that was obviously the first over the line, Microsoft, Saudi Aramco.
$2 trillion,
exactly. The second after Apple to become $2 trillion. You've got Amazon, Google, and now Facebook. A clutch of real disruptors that we can't live without and that we use almost on a daily basis. So you can't do much without oil. We talk here a lot about ESG themes, and speaking of that, there's been a lot of discussion in the market at the moment about what's going to happen to coal, to these dirty fossil fuels. And, you look at what Ivan Glasenberg has made a career out of doing. He hasn't made a career out of following the herd. And in his very final deal before handing over the reins at Glencore, he's betting on a long, lucrative twilight in coal, as the Bloomberg headline says. So what do you make of this deal to say... Effectively, I just want to finish this thought here.
Yeah.
He's saying that, yes, we understand the environmental issues, but there's social and governance issues here. If you're in a developing market economy, you still need to ensure that you're creating employment and that you're doing the just transition thing. And he's saying, well, we'll take off the S and the G, thank you very much.
Yeah, I actually love this story, Michael. I think it's brilliant. And if you actually read that Bloomberg article that went out, I mean, it really it does make quite a compelling argument. I just love the fact that while everyone else is running around sort of avoiding these things, it takes someone like Mr. Glasenberg and Glencore, and we all know the history of Mr. Rich as well, who didn't really care who he traded with.
Mark Rich,
This is exactly up Glencore Street, you know, take on something. And they're no fools, Glencore. I mean, they're one of the most profitable trading house in the world, if not ever, with regard to almost 70% income drive just from trading commodities. So they're seeing value that other people are not. I think I'd probably back Mr. Glasenberg on this one. But I love that story. It was brilliant.
Well, and the thing is, you're not going to see a supply response in this market, because it's very difficult to fund new coal greenfield or brownfield operations at this time. So we're seeing a rebound in seaborne coal prices, and that is likely to continue. So, yeah, and you have to ask yourself, rather tongue-in-cheek, I mean, if you believe in ESG, would you be investing in something like Nuspass or Prosus with Tencent as the biggest holding? And we all know about the way the Chinese government thinks about labor rights and all of those other things, which should be pretty big ESG considerations.
It's almost like one of the running jokes. I mean, I think a lot of people in money managers in our industry as well are all pushing for this ESG space. And take electric vehicles, for example, or batteries. I mean, have you ever seen what digging out lithium out the ground does to lithium?
Yeah.
I mean, the scar lasts on that earth for millennia. You know, but all the stuff that goes in to make your planet green, ironically, is quite dirty to get out the ground. So, yeah, I got away with it, I said, but I mean, I find the whole thing quite interesting. But, interesting space.
So you should never be investing based on the buzzword of the moment or the day, which is certainly ESG at the moment. Cap Industrial came out with an operational update for the period 1 July of last year to the end of May this year. And also is one of those companies that is being buffeted by a few ESG concerns. Obviously, Cap has the likes of Safripol in its portfolio, and there's a big push against polymers and plastics and all that kind of thing. But overall, a pretty positive operational update for Cap Industrial.
Yeah, I'm going to be like unbiasedly positive on these guys. I mean, I actually really like the share. I went to... pre-lockdown, Michael, when we still used to go to company presentations at the JSC.
Ah, the good old days.
The good old days, and you could sit next to people. But I remember going to see Cup and the boys give a presentation. And I remember coming out of the meeting of the JSC just thinking, like, what an old school industrial bunch of board. That literally, I could almost imagine them rolling their sleeves up and walking around and unscrewing light bulbs and stuff just to save money. I mean, they were that diligent.
And their steel cap boots. No, exactly.
And their suits that they didn't feel very comfortable in talking to the public in Sandton. They just didn't want to be here. But I think they're a fantastic business. I mean, they do everything from, obviously a lot of to the springs, the basins and beds. You spoke about the polyurethanes. They do a lot of the bottling. They even do a large percentage of the headrests and the dashboards that go in the Mercedes C-Class. So if you want to bet on a recovery in South Africa, I think you could look a lot further than not look at Cup. I think they really are on that space, on the coalface, they're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. They, you know, timber and an automotive division as well.
Those plywoods, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned something about being able to actually interact with boards before Zoom and Teams and everything else. Dave Ebrill, who's an analyst I respect greatly, tagged me on a tweet to Leila Faree of the JSC recently saying that AGMs have deteriorated considerably in this kind of webcast AGM era. And I have to agree with him, because too many companies are now not allowing questions on resolutions until voting has already taken place. You're forced to ask questions in a chat box, and you're limited in terms of your characters, and often management can just ignore the questions if they don't like them. It's far too sanitized and curated environment. I think the JSE's really got to look into this.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you're spot on. I mean, I must be honest, before I even look at companies I want to invest or put client funds into, I mean, part of my due diligence was certainly getting onto my Reuters screen, seeing when the calendar of the company was, when they're presenting, when they're going to give a feedback to shareholders. And I think it's very important to actually go and sit down and see what you're buying into, because, you know, a lot of good old-fashioned investing is you're buying, it's a bit of a cliche, Michael, but you are actually buying management to a certain extent. And it's not that easy to read a board or read management over your Zoom screen. It's not easier when they're sitting on stage and answering questions. I couldn't agree with you more. I think let's bring back far more sort of interaction with companies in South Africa.
Yeah, we're going to have Leila Faree on the new Hot Business show to tell us what she's doing about ensuring that we have meetings that are fit for purpose. Yes, I understand webcasts make things easier, but there has to be a way to do this that enables transparency and accountability at the same time. Those cannot be sacrificed on this altar of the new digital future. And then Distell, renewing its cautionary announcement, this is just standard regulatory stuff, or are they just trying to ensure that they approach the commission with a better BE offer than that private equity firm did with Burger King?
No, I think this is more regulatory. I think they're just going for the motions. I mean, this has been the worst kept secret in town for a number of years. I just think it's finally coming to a fore. I mean, I just think they're going for the motions. I think Heineken, it's a perfect fit for them. I think it's a perfect fit on both sides. And I think they're just going for the motions personally.
Yeah, and we will certainly be following that very closely, the PIC, the largest shareholder there, to see what happens when it comes to getting this one across the line at the Competition Commission. And then Argent, another one of those industrial stocks that tends to fly below the radar, but it's a great lesson in really textbook capital allocation and how a CEO can be something of a reformed capital allocator here. The share was up the most in 2 months today after reporting a massive surge in profits. It's a steel products manufacturer announcing a 63% increase in HEPS during a period where it's been pretty tough for the steel industry. I know if you're in the downstream, it's tough. If you're ArcelorMittal South Africa and you're protected, well, I mean, you're smiling all the way to the bank. But these results from Argent were really something to make shareholders very pleased.
Yeah, what a cracking set of numbers. I actually came across my screen this morning when they released it, and I sort of sent it out to my group. And someone sort of came back to me, the chaps in my team, and said, it's got a 675 million Rand market cap. That's it, 675 million. And yet you're coming out with things like this with revenue of almost 2 billion Rand. I mean, it really is a real good set of numbers. Even though it is a bit of a small cap, it's a cracking set of numbers. Stock's up 70% year to date. Trades on a forward PE, Michael, of 5.6 times.
Giving it away.
Really, Yeah, I mean, this is where you need a decent evaluation to sort of shout it from the rooftops, because I think that was a really good set of numbers and they should be proud of themselves.
Absolutely. Well, we're shouting it from the rooftops of Classic Business.
Yes, we are.
Nick Kunze, portfolio manager at Sunland Private Wealth. So for the last time on Classic Business, look forward to having you on Hot Business from next week. Thanks, Nick.